Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. But I want to welcome you once again to the TIN Open Forum. Everyone everywhere, I hope that you enjoy our program this evening because it sounds like a real great one. You know, like Gordon said, we have a gentleman from Perth, Australia, whose name is Ken. He has many talents, and he's very involved with the ISS. But before we turn it over to Ken tonight, I'm going to call on Mr. Gordon, KY6B, to introduce our speaker and make any other announcements he'd like to make. Ken and Gordon, thanks so much for allowing me to begin the program this evening, and I hope that everyone enjoys.
Hey, thanks, Ms. Sunshine. Good evening to you. Good evening to everybody that's connected, and a great big good evening to Ken down under. Ken, we're very appreciative that you've offered to take on this net this evening and share your knowledge on ham communication with the ISS folks. And the reason I wanted to jump in just before you got started, Ken, I wanted to make sure that everybody understands that there's a lot of material available on the Internet on this subject that Ken will be touching base with here tonight. We have listed some 8 website URLs on our breaking news currently posted at www.voip.southcars.com. The leading URL is sort of interesting. When you have a chance, you may want to take a look at it. It's a video presentation of what the inside of the ISS really looks like. Very enjoyable to watch. And then the other URLs that are posted, some additional 7 in number, take you into the nitty-gritty of getting started to communicate ham-wise with the bird up there. So if you ride with us, you're going to have fun this evening. Ken, thank you. Allow me to turn the gavel to Perth, Australia from KY6V. Go ahead, sir.
KY 6V and all the net listening there, a very good evening to you and a very good evening to Kathy. My pleasure to be able to come aboard tonight on the South Cars TIN net, and as mentioned, I'm going to just run through a few things about communicating with the International Space Station. As mentioned, my name is Ken, call sign is VK6 Charlie Oscar, and I do reside in Western Australia, about 10 kilometres northeast of our capital city, which is Perth. We'll start and go through some of the notes I'm referring to here that I've made, and every so often there I'll put a break in and see if there's any questions that the group may want to ask as we progress. Anyway, today, as mentioned, we're talking about communicating with the International Space Station and various onboard ham communication facilities or modes that enable licensed hams to be able to communicate with the ISS as it orbits the Earth. Now, a few details about the ISS. Firstly, the International Space Station is a habitable artificial satellite with the first segments of its construction launched into orbit on the 20th of November 1998, and it has been continuously manned and visited by over 200 individuals, including astronauts and a few paying visitors to date. The ISS is the area of a US football field. It weighs around 861,804 pounds, and that doesn't include visiting craft attached, It has more living room than a five-bedroom house, two bathrooms, a gymnasium, and a 360-degree cupola viewing window. The solar array is approximately 240 feet wide, so one can see it as a very large structure. We'll just have a pause there for a moment. And this is VK6 Charlie Oscar returning to the net. Now, the orbit details. The International Space Station is maintained in a nearly circular LEO, or low Earth, west-to-east orbit, with a minimal altitude of 205 miles, or 330 kilometres, and a maximum altitude of 255 miles, or approximately 410 kilometres. And it orbits at an inclination of 51.6 degrees to the Earth's equator. It also travels at an average speed of 17,227 miles per hour, or equating to 27,724 kilometers an hour, and it completes it completes 15.7 orbits every day around the Earth. Now, this means that for ham radio operators, there are around 7 to 8 accessible passes per day for both northern and southern hemisphere hams to be able to work the onboard ISS radio equipment should they be turned on at that time. Now, this brings me to the next phase in my talk about communicating with the ISS, and we'll just have another quick break. Okay, this is VK6 Charlie Oscar returning to the South Cars net. Now, we'll just talk about some onboard radio facilities for hams. Now, although there are various other communication modes that are exclusively used by NASA and the astronauts and scientists from partnering countries around the world, the radio communication modes that are available at present to hams are as follows. Now, the first one is voice communications. And for Region 2 and 3, which is the United States and Australian region, the downlink for voice is 145.800. Now, that's the 2-meter band, 145.800 megahertz. And normally the uplink is 144.490 megahertz. Now, this may change from time to time with the uplink frequency, and we will discuss this a bit further along. Now, the Russian call sign for voice, if you happen to hear an astronaut on the downlink frequency, is RS0ISS. That's RS0ISS. And the US call sign for voice is NA1SS. That's NA1SS. Now, the astronauts' free time is very limited due to their heavy workload schedule, so if you're lucky enough to hear a call from the ISS, the above call signs would be used and replied and followed by your call sign, of course, on the reply. Just another small break. Okay, VK6 Charlie Oscar resuming. Now, the second mode of operation that hams can use is the crossband repeater, which is on board with the Kenwood radio. Now, the downlink for the crossband repeater is also 145.800 megahertz, and the uplink is 437.800 megahertz. And you do have to allow for Doppler shift, especially for 70 centimetres, which is because of the ISS approaching and departing your QDH, the radio frequency does tend to rise and fall. And unfortunately, on board the ISS there, they don't adjust anything, so you need to adjust that on your ground station. You'll also need to check the updated reports on the ISS Fan Club website in the crossband repeater segment for updates on repeater activities and times. And the third mode is slow scan TV. Now, slow scan TV runs periodically and pitches a beam down from the ISS, and the downlink is also 145.800. You'll also need to check on the ISS Fan Club segment, slow scan TV segment, for operational time and activation dates, etc. One more pause. VK6 Charlie Oscar resuming. And the fourth mode is packet radio. Now, packet radio is on 145.825 on the downlink, and it is also 145.825 on the uplink. So we've got 145.825 down and 145.825 up. Now, this is also subject to change and usually happens sometimes after a school contact and the frequency is left on voice. So once again, it pays to check with the ISS Fan Club website for the latest reports in the packet radio segment on current frequency updates and reports that are submitted by hams on a regular basis. As you can see, there are basically four different ways at various times that hams can communicate with the ISS as it passes over your QTH, but each mode needs its own applications and different operating procedures and programs, etc. So there's too much really to cover on the allotted time for the four of the modes, so tonight we're going to concentrate on packet radio. Now, before I proceed, I'll pass it over to either Gordon or the net, and perhaps we can take some questions and answers before we proceed on anything we've just covered on any of those aspects. So this is VK6 Charlie Oscar turning it over to either Gordon perhaps or anyone on the net that would like to call back and just put a few questions forward there. Over.
Yeah, 6 Victor, sir.
Yes, KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ken. KY6V, Gordon. I was in the throes when you turned it over to get the URLs placed in the text box. I leaded with the fan club, since you hit that one first. I've got a couple more to put in, but I want to draw everybody's attention that they should copy and paste that information when they can to look at it further after the program is over. I was fascinated. I've been in all of those sites that you have given me in one shape or another, and the fan club really got my attention. And I started to listen to some of their recordings that were on there, and they were fantastic. Had I realized that those were there, I would have probably suggested that we insert some of those audio in this program. Too late, Charlie Brown. Thank you, Ken. Back to you from KY6V. Over.
Yeah, KY6V, VK6, Charlie Oscar returning. Yes, Gordon. Well, we'll just touch on the ISS Fan Club for a moment. As you say, the URL is actually put on the box there in the bottom right-hand corner for the listeners. And I would recommend that that is downloaded and placed into your favourites list, perhaps, because all these programs radio modes that hams can use to contact the ISS do have their own segments on the ISS Fan Club, and they keep everyone up to date as to whether slow scan TV may be operational or packet radio. All these modes are turned on and off at various times, subject to astronauts having to do spacewalks, etc., for repair jobs on the outside of the ISS. So they turn radio communications off at that time, and also they normally turn the radios off when the astronauts actually dock onto the space station. But further down my talk, there is a segment on the international, the ISS Fan Club, with a tracking program on the top left-hand side of the page. So if you don't feel as though you can fill out a tracking program that I've suggested, there is a 24/7 tracking program on the ISS to let you know where it is at any one time. And you can also put your call sign in a box there and sign up and become a member as well. And I will discuss other benefits there towards the end of my talk. Okay, I'll put it back to the net again. Would any caller out there that's listening like to come back with any questions at this stage? This is VK6 Charlie Oscar turning it back to the South Cars TIN net. Over. Okay, that sounds like a big no at the moment. So we'll proceed along a little bit, and as we go down through our notes here, etc., I will put it back to the group and see if there are any further questions. So please feel free to ask anything you may wish to put forward, and we'll also have a question and answer session after the rest of the notes here. Okay, this is VK6 Charlie Oscar proceeding with tonight's TIN net on communicating with the ISS. I I'll just pause for a very quick break because I've got a couple of long paragraphs. VK6 Charlie Oscar is resuming. Okay, carrying on. As Gordon mentioned, I've forwarded all the URLs to the South Car Committee members, and I'm going to just go through some of the programs that we can use. So for these radio modes. Now, they're all freeware programs that I've put up, so it's not going to cost you anything to get up and running if you want to give any of these programs a try. And they can all be downloaded at those addresses that Gordon has kindly put up on the net. Now, although there are, getting back to packet radio, which I'm going to mainly talk about tonight, because the other topics will have to wait another time, because they do take a bit to get through. However, with regards to packet radio, there are numerous tracking and terminal programs available. Now, as mentioned, I've only put up Orbitron, which I suggest is a very good program, and there is that freeware program on the ISS. So anyway, we'll carry on. If you decide you want to have a look at FlowScan TV, there is a program, MMSS TV. Now, that's also a freeware program, and it's a matter of just putting in your call sign and a few parameters, and you can simply put an audio cable from the output of your radio into the back of your sound card, running that program, and you are able to download pictures direct from the ISS. But we can go into that if someone wants to ask about it. Now, for voice, the other mode, all you need really is just your radio and the required frequencies as mentioned, and an antenna. And you will hear voice reasonably easy. For the crossband repeater, that gets a little bit more a little bit more technical in the fact that you do need really a suitable dual band radio for the uplink and downlink if you've got one available, because you're working two separate bands, 2 meters and 10 meters down and 70 sems up. So a good dual band radio makes it very a lot more easier. Now, for packet communications, UIView 32 is the program I have recommended, although there are others. UIView 32 is a freeware program again, and it takes very little to get it up and running. Another break. VK6CO continuing. Okay, now carrying on with packet radio. Now, on board the ISS, there are two radios used for packet operations, one being a Kenwood D700 for the 2-metre band, which is normally on 145.825 megahertz simplex, and an Ericsson UHF radio in the Columbus section of the ISS, and that operates on the 70 centimetre band for packet on 437.550 megahertz simplex. Now, I'm sure most of you, perhaps at one time, have set up and used a local BBS or a bulletin board service with your computer, a TNC interface with an appropriate terminal packet program, such as WinPack or TPK, and if you don't use a terminal node controller, which is, as we say, a little box that interfaces between a radio and your computer, you can also use your sound card with a program called AGW Packet Engine. The BBS on the International Space Station is no different from a terrestrial BBS here on Earth. So the same equipment and setup and operating procedures also apply with the ISS. Now, the packet standard is AX25 protocol. Now, AX25 protocol just means that some years ago they decided to select a standard at which they could use to actually interface messages sent from your computer into your little box, which was your TNC, and then back out to your radio with tones that would be accepted on the packet system. Now, if you've never worked packet before and you're not familiar with what is required, I'm sure there are many willing hands to assist with advice or any help you may need to try out this interesting mode of communication. Another break. VK6CO resuming. Now, getting started, repacket. Now, as mentioned, you'll need a computer or a laptop, preferably with Windows XP or Windows 7, which is It makes life easy using these programs. You'll need a TNC or a terminal node controller, such as a PacRat or an MFJ1270 series or a Cantronics, a radio with the required frequencies, and a terminal program to type and receive the appropriate commands to the ISS BBS. Now, this might sound a little bit daunting, but believe me, a TNC is readily available around a lot of ham swap meets, etc., etc., and there are plenty of them on eBay for sale if you look around. So a lot of hams do have them in cupboards laying around, and as I say, you can pick them up quite easily, and there's plenty of information out there as to how to hook them up. VK6 Charlie Oscar, just having a quick break again on the tin net. VK6EO resuming. Now I'd recommend UIView 32, which is a freeware program, as mentioned before, also, and can only be used by licensed hams. It must be registered, but it is free. And I've provided the details which Gordon has put up there on the net to the committee there, and it can be downloaded, and registration has a section where you can simply enter your call sign when you go to the download section and the registration section. So you'd put your call sign in and your name, and a few details are usually verified within 24 hours. You'll check back to that website and you can obtain your rego number, and you enter it into the program to activate it. Now, that's just to stop non-hams from actually getting on the program and interrupting traffic on the space station. As you know, they're working the space station there. Everything's got to be pretty well right. You can't afford to sort of play around too much, and you have to do the right thing. Now, in the setup section of UIView, there are details required to set the program up, such as your longitude, your latitude, your call sign, and there's a line there called the UnProto address with some other details, and that'll enable the program to let the BBS accept your commands when you connect to the ISS. In the UnProto line, it should include CQ ARIS, which is the call sign of the digi repeater that's on board, and I'll speak to you about that shortly. And if you're having problems being relayed through one of the local ground eye gates, the UnProto line can be added to with ARIS SatGate Wide, and you can put your name in it if you want to as well. In the beacon comment line, you may want to put a short comment like Bob in Florida, or simply your call sign and QTH. ARIS is the onboard call sign for the ISS DigiPeter, and therefore it is part of the UnProto line, and I, as mentioned, I'll discuss the DigiPeter shortly. I've also sent a facsimile to the committee showing a step-by-step setup of what is needed to be filled out, so anyone interested can get help should they need it. I'll just return it back to Gordon, our controller there, and anyone in the net perhaps that may want to put some questions or answers at this stage. KY6V for the net, VK6 Charlie Oscar, for any questions, please.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. Gordon here, KY6V. I didn't expect that, but I've been taking dutiful notes. And there's three items here that I'd like to bring up that you might ponder. First of all, I was shaken to reality when you mentioned that the ISS was using for their UHF radio on Ericsson. And I just happen to know a good friend of mine, George, KW4LCB, who happens to have, it's either five or six, brand spanking new Ericsson UHF radios for sale at a reasonable price, I might add. So if somebody's interested in something like that, well, get in touch with me, and I'll get you together with George, and you can see how that turns out. The next note I made was the download, 32-bit, 16-bit, and so on. I've seen them both. I have not seen anything at 64, Ken. So my question of you, I'm running Windows 7 at 64-bit. Is that a problem? And lastly, my note here was that everybody should realize that TNCs on the used market are very inexpensive. And if you buy a brand spanking new one, it might cost you $130. So, you know, you're not talking big money here. Ken, I noticed when my fingers were traveling through the Yellow Pages today that the 1270B has now been replaced by MFJ to a 1270X, I think is what they're calling it. And introducing the KISS mode, K-I-S-S. Maybe that makes it keep it simple, stupid. I don't know, but explain what the KISS mode is with a 1270. And back to you, Ken, from KY6V.
Yeah, KY6V, Rico 6, Charlie Oscar returning. Well, Gordon, the first question there about 64-bit. Yes, if you're running Windows 7 or... on 64-bit, there's not a problem normally running those programs there. So I do have a laptop with 64-bit with backup programs there, and they run quite comfortably. So that's 32-bit or 64-bit is fine. Now, looking on eBay sometimes, you will pick up the MFJ 1270 series TNCs. Do go for around about $20 or $30. Now, I am using both Packrats and MFJ TNC, so I use the MFJ TNC in KISS mode for my iGate. Now, that runs on a Linux program, so normally things, if you're running an iGate, we usually run in KISS mode. But for an MFJ, for a standard... UI view program, or you don't really need to change anything. The EEPROM inside the MFJ TNC is quite sufficient to run UI view, and you just need to set the DIP switches on the back to 1200 baud. Now, I have sent a URL to you as well last night, Gordon. With a setup, most of the MFJs are all the same configuration, and there's a group of switches on the back of the MFJ that need to be put into 1200 baud mode for packet operation on the ISS. So I do have the configurations, as mentioned, sent over to you. I think that's about the easiest way to leave it at that. Just that, excuse me, hams just need to know that if they do obtain an MFJ TNC, they only have to interface it with their UI view program and the computer with a DB9 plug on one side and a RS232 plug on the other end. And that's basically all the technical type stuff they need to get it up and running there. Over, Gordon.
Okay. Ken, just clarify KISS mode a little further for me. I was getting the impression that it was Linux-based. Is that correct, or is there more meaning to it? Over.
Okay, Gordon, VK6CO returning. I don't have the exact explanation for it with me at the moment, but I can supply that there probably after the end of the program. We'll get back to you there, Gordon, but... all I can tell you there about it is, at the moment, I do run a KISS mode, which means that you have to alter the EEPROM programming, and that's about as far as I can really tell you about it at this stage there, unfortunately. So that basically is the difference. What I do is just run KISS mode in Linux and just the standard AX25 protocol with the standard EEPROM. With MFJ on the XP Windows there, Gordon. But I will get back to you on with further detail without giving you the wrong information there. Over.
Well, that's fine, Ken. You know, just take your time on that. It's more curiosity than anything else at this point. I think for just further clarification and see if you agree with my statement here, the guys and gals, if you're interested in getting into digital communication with the ISS. It's a packet-based system using protocol AX25, which has been around for a long, long time. I'm very familiar with it. And when you get right down to it, you're just talking a few pieces of equipment. If you have a transceiver for 2 meters, and maybe a dual band if you want to get into the voice aspect, so you can get in on 440 as well. You've got the transceiver, you've got your computer, you've got this little black box called a TNC, a terminal node controller, very inexpensive, and your computer has some software that makes it all work, and that's it, in a very simplified fashion. Do you agree with that statement, Ken? And then please continue. KY6V.
KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar with the TIN South Cars Net. Yes, that is 100% correct there, Gordon. And it was just, as mentioned previously, a protocol used for packet radio. And it's just so that a computer system can communicate with your TNC, etc. And yeah, basically you've covered that very well. So we'll continue on with a few other things anyway about packet radio, etc. And just trying to remember where I got up to actually, but anyway, we'll carry on. Other things to do. Once you've set up your radio, your TNC and your computer with your terminal program and connected it to a suitable antenna, you're almost ready to go. Now for the 2 meter band, even a simple quarter wave antenna will be sufficient for contact to the ISS. However, if you've got a higher gain antenna or a right-hand circular polarized antenna or a cross Yagi, that makes life easier. It's a lot better for reception. But a simple quarter wave 2 meter antenna has a good radiation pattern, and it's ideal and very cheap to get you up and running or even listening to the downlink or packet. So that really cuts the cost down, and they're very easy to make as well. With 2 meter packet operation, Doppler is not really an issue. However, on the 70 centimeter band, you really need to compensate for the Doppler effect to achieve satisfactory results, because the frequency will change very quickly, but most 2 meter radios are broadbanded enough to be able to handle the change in frequency during a pass. Once all that's sorted, you'll need to use a tracking program, as we mentioned previously, so you can see when the ISS passes over your region and it's in range to work. Now, Orbitron by Sebastian Stoff and the URL provided by Gordon is a really good one, and we've gone through that about being a freeware program, and you need to enter your longitude and latitude into the program, and it'll track and also generate a footprint as it comes over your region. Or your QDH, which indicates the ISS is in range and you're able to access the onboard facilities. So basically the program sort of generates a footprint onto the map on your computer screen, and it'll let you know. The footprint usually covers about 4,000 kilometres, so anywhere within that 4,000 kilometre circle or the footprint, the ISS is accessible. So it's got a very good range. I can access it down here about 2,400 kilometres away, right down towards the Arctic, Antarctic. So good conditions, and you get good results. A quick break. VK6 Charlie Oscar resuming. Now usually, as mentioned before also, there are 7 to 8 passes a day that are workable for each region, and depending on the elevation and location of the pass, and the time given to work the ISS is usually from a few minutes on a low pass to 10 minutes on a high overhead pass. So that gives you plenty of time to connect to the BBS. You can check for messages or leave a message, or you can disconnect from the board after you have a bit of a look around. Now if you feel you don't want to get into packet, you can still use UI view and to digipeat a beacon through the system, which I'll get onto there in a second there. But anyway, don't forget too, there's also the tracking program on the ISS website, which runs 24/7, and that makes it a lot easier for you. if you don't want to use Orbitron. Now, contacting the onboard mail, the packet system on the ISS, if you want to contact the mailbox, like all BBSs, it has an identifying call sign. Now, the packet call sign on the ISS is RS0ISS-11. That's RS0ISS-11. That's the official call sign of the packet BBS on board there. So when the ISS is in range and your equipment is turned on, including UIView, and you've selected the right frequency, in the terminal window of UIView, you'd simply type in a command on your keyboard, and the command is connect, which is a C space RS0ISS-11. That's C and a space RS0ISS-11. Now, that is the call sign, as mentioned. You would hit the enter button on your keyboard, and the program will send several tries to connect to the ISS BBS. If it's successful, you'll see on your terminal window, it'll come back to you and it'll say that welcome to the ISS, that you're connected, and it gives a short list of alphabetical commands. Now, these commands have been forwarded to Gordon, and they're basically the same as a terrestrial BBS. And you usually get about 6 or 8 letters, and I'll just go through those very briefly. Just a pause. VK6CO resuming. Now, some of the letters you get, if you want to connect to the ISS without sort of bogging it down too much, you could put a J command in and enter, and that will give you a list of all the people that have contacted the BBS packet system. Or if you want to write a message or leave a message on the system, you would put a W for write, a space and your call sign. The ISS bulletin board will come back with a message on your terminal screen saying subject. You can put a subject in, hi. You can then type in some text, maybe hello Gordon in Florida, and you always finish your text with a /EX. Once you do that, you hit the enter button, it'll come back with another list of commands, and you'd put a B for bye in, hit your enter button, and it disconnects you. And it sounds a little bit heavy, I presume, but once you have a look at it and have a couple of tries, it all falls into place pretty easy. But it's exactly the same if you've used a bulletin board here, a terrestrial bulletin board. It's just the same, except it's on the ISS. Just another break. VK6 Charlie Oscar resuming with the South Cars net. Anyway, what advantage is there contacting the ISS BBS? Now, using the BBS, it enables hams to leave messages for any other hams or individual ham worldwide. For example, I might leave a message for Kathy, K6SUN here in Australia, and when the ISS orbits past Kathy's QDH, she would be able to access the BBS, download my message, read it and delete it, or perhaps put in a reply. Messages and a list of hams who have contacted the ISS BBS remain on the system for about 5 to 10 days and are then cleared so you can check the messages within that time period. There's also another aspect of the BBS using UIView. When the ISS passes over your QTH and you feel you don't want to use the bulletin board or the packet system, by pressing the F9 button on your keyboard, it will send a beacon to the ISS Digipeater. Instead of connecting to the packet system. And if it hears you, it will digipeat your signal via the onboard radio, and two things will happen. Now, the first thing that will happen is you'll see on your terminal window RS0ISS-4 plus your call sign confirming your beacon contact. And the second thing that will happen is a local iGate, such as one I run or many other amateurs around the world, will hopefully also hear your digipeated beacon on the downlink, process it and forward it to the appropriate website, and place your call sign on a worldwide map with your coordinates, time of beacon, etc. Now, I've sent these URLs to Gordon also, and you're able to refer to this list and the map at any time, and it shows the last 80 stations to work the ISS, and and any other stations that have also digipeded their call through the space station. Through packet radio via the ISS, many friends can be made as well as great contacts. Hopefully you may be interested enough to give it a try. Just another break, VK60O resuming. There is also the satisfaction of obtaining an official QSL card from NASA confirming your contact with the ISS. And appropriate details can be found by looking on the ISS Fan Club webpage again to see about how you obtain your card. So they're a very nice card. And so just reiterating on that, if you do hook up to the ISS via packet or voice mode, there are some nice QSL cards to be obtained. Well, that's about all I've got really on this session for packet. It is quite a daunting subject to talk about at times because there's so many aspects of it, but hopefully I've given you a bit of an insight into how it does work, and certainly, as Gordon mentioned, I'm available to assist in any questions or setting up of any programs that you may wish to have a try at organising, and I can take a few questions and hopefully give a few answers. So that's just about it. I'll put it back to Gordon, and Gordon may want to put a few more comments in, and certainly we'll take any questions and answers. And I do have UIView open if anyone has actually downloaded the program and they do want some details on what to fill in where. I can supply that either now or at a later date. So we'll hand it back to Gordon, and a very good evening to everyone. KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar for the net.
Just absolutely great, Ken. Thank you. And boy, you're doing such a marvelous job on watching that server timer, too. Very, very professional. Gordon here, KY6V. Two quick questions. And then I understand that Gary up in New York, KC2RMO, has a couple of questions for you also. I've been reading the text box. Right-hand circular polarization. Very familiar with those type of antennas. Is this the standard that has been set for communication with the ISP as opposed to left-hand circular polarization? Question number one. Question number two. Digipeding in order to get to the mailbox. Do I assume that one finds out who they need to digipede to in order to get uplink, because that last guy that you're getting to is set up to do that? Am I reading that right, Ken? Over.
KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar. We'll take last ones first there, Gordon. Now, if you have your UIView program running, and you've got two options when the ISS comes into range, you can either contact the onboard packet system by typing in the C space RS0 ISS-11, and you'll come back with the packet commands and continue on to access the mailbox. If you don't wish to do that, you do have the other option of just accessing the digipeater, and that just entails pushing the F9 button on your keyboard. It will send a beacon up to the ISS. If the ISS hears you, now this is separate from the packet system, it will process your signal, it will retransmit it, and an Earth station, an iGate, hopefully will hear it and process that beacon, and it will forward the appropriate beacon from that station that's actually pushed the F9 button and digipeded up to the ISS, and send it to the appropriate URL over in the United States there, and it'll put those details up onto that worldwide map I was telling you about, and the list of 80 of the last amateurs to do so. So there's two options. One is the packet when it comes over, and the second option, as mentioned, is just strictly push the F9 button to send one of your beacons up to let it recognize that you've actually contacted the system there, Gordon. So that's that one. Right-hand circular polarization. Yes, well, I presume you could use left-hand circular polarization as well, but right-hand circular polarization seems to be the go with egg beaters or potato, Texas potato mashers or whatever you want to use, or crock yagis. They normally, if you have a read on the website, the ISS Fan Club website, most of the amateurs tend to be using right circular polarized for good results, because, as you know, signals do get a bit distorted from time to time between vertical and horizontal polarization, and a circular antenna is very good for sorting those signals out there. Over.
Okay, that's just as clear as it can be. Thank you. Yeah, I was misinterpreting the digipeater. You know, I thought you were going through some digipeaters terrestrially until you ended up with somebody going to the bird, and I didn't realize that the bird had its own digipeater. So that all cleared it up. You know, I'm coming from an antiquated standpoint. It's been 12, 15 years since I played with Packet heavily. And I recall, you might be amused about this, I was living in Miami at the time, or just south of Miami, here in the state of Florida. And I worked myself clear across the United States from node to node to node until I got to San Francisco. And when I got into San Francisco, I hopped a satellite and ended up in Boston and worked my way all the way from Boston back down to my location in Miami and connected to myself. Go ahead, Ken, and pick up the other guys. KY6V, over.
Yeah, KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar returning to the South Coast net. Yes, very good there, Gordon. And yes, the ISS, just to clarify there, does have its own digipeater on board. And it's just basically the local station. Say myself, for example, when the ISS is in range, I can push my F9 button to generate a beacon. And it's heard by the onboard ISS digipeater, relayed back down to one of the eye gates, also within that footprint area, and it's picked up and sent, as I said, to the appropriate URL, and that particular station that had confirmation of the beacon on his terminal program can look up that website, and he'll see his call sign on the map, and you're also eligible for a QSL card if you can just jot the time down or cut and paste it, and send your own card to the appropriate webmaster, and those QSL sites are on the ISS fan club website as well, where you can post your cards to. There are different regions and different people that look after that for you, so hopefully people will give it a go out there. Okay, as mentioned, I think you said there was a KC2RM0. Gary had a question there, so we'll put it over to Gary if he's listening, and perhaps I can hopefully answer your question, Gary. KC2RMO, for the group, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Go ahead, Gary. Okay, not sure if Gary is there at the moment, but we'll try again. KC2RMO. KC2 Romeo Mike Oscar. Gary, if you're available, please, sir, you may have a question there that I can hopefully answer. Over.
Graham. Hello there, Ken, and good evening. And first of all, thank you for this is just great stuff. This is absolutely great stuff, and it's a subject that I've been keenly interested in for a long time, and it's kind of funny because tonight I'm actually kind of getting introduced to two things that I've wanted to explore a little bit. I didn't realize that number one, that you could use Packet for contacting the ISS, and that was something I'd always wanted to fool around with. I did make an attempt at at talking to the ISS a little bit earlier this year, over the summer, and of course I did it totally wrong, but I had the frequencies okay, I had the ups and downs okay. I was standing out in my front yard with a J-pole with a handle on it trying to contact them. It didn't work too well, obviously. That was kind of a funny thing. It kind of reminds me of about 14 years ago when I was looking up in the yellow pages for the phone number for the internet. It's like, what, you know, how do you contact the internet? But I did have a question for you, and that's really kind of getting to the whole heart of that matter. I'm just going to buy a nickel for a second here. For those of us who are just getting started in that particular medium, and let's say those of us who've never touched a packet radio setup, would you advise trying to get good at packet first, or at least get proficient in packet first, and then as another phase try to contact the ISS, or do you think you can combine both of them? Do you think that's a doable thing, that you can have your cake and eat it too? This is KC2RMO. We'll turn it back to VK6CO.
KC2RMO, VK6Charlie Oscar. Very good questions there, and thank you very much for coming up on the net there and asking that, Gary. Look, certainly if you do have any terrestrial BBSs still operating in your area, you can use exactly the same equipment to introduce yourself to the pros and cons of it. It is a very good mode of operation, actually, and the beauty about it is you can use exactly the same equipment. It's just basically a frequency change to start working the International Space Station. Your programs remain the same, your TNC remains the same, and just a quick switch of frequencies, and some of the commands may be a little bit different than the terrestrial BBSs, only for the fact that the ISS does have its own, a couple of extra characters there for certain onboard functions, but I would go the whole hog, Gary. I wouldn't sort of worry about it. The beauty about it is if you make a mistake on the packet system connecting to the BBS on the ISS, the worst thing that can happen is it will just throw you off the system. It'll disconnect you and you'll see disconnected come up. And normally, too, you set the program. The default setting on UIView is for 10 tries. So if you type in your connect space RS0ISS-11 for the official BBS call sign and hit the enter button, your UIView program will generate 10 tries to connect to the BBS. Now, normally it'll connect in the first two or three beacons it sends, but if it doesn't, it'll simply just time out and disconnect, and you miss the boat. You either type it in again and give it a try, because you only have 10 minutes maximum on the longest path, and sometimes on a low elevation, as mentioned, you might only get 2 or 3 minutes. In that situation, what I would do is just use the F9 button and send a few beacons up, and you'll probably find a local eye gate in the area will hear the beacon relay through the digipeater, and you'll have your call sign posted onto the URL that I've supplied to Gordon, and you'll be able to have a look at the fruits of your work there. It's really great fun, and you get to meet hundreds of people, leave messages. There's a message system on UIView too that during a pass you can like we often send messages on the terminal window from here to Sydney, 3,000 or 4,000 k's away while the ISS is going over. So I've only touched on a very light, few things, capabilities on what packet can do, because it's quite a long and lengthy sort of a subject to talk about there, Gary. I hope that's helped a little bit. KC2RMO, VK6CO.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah, that really did help a lot, and it gave me some good insight into this. So This is really great. I'm looking forward to both getting into the packet end of things, and I'm really looking forward to the possibility of talking to the ISS. And just kind of made me think too. Boy, we are lucky to have these licenses, because we get to do some really cool stuff. That's for sure. This is KC2RMO turning it back to the net.
Yeah, KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Very good there, Gordon. There was one other thing about KISS mode that you mentioned earlier, but I'll just put it back to the group again, see if there is anyone else out there that has a few questions that I may be able to answer, and I can just touch on the difference between KISS mode and some of the older MFJ 1270s that we use, and you don't have to worry about that. So we'll put it back to the net again for any more takers, and certainly like to hear from any other caller. This is VK6 Charlie Oscar returning for anyone out there listening that would like to put a question forward. Over.
WQ1I.
Yes, WQ1I. Paul, I believe it is. Very good evening to you, Paul. Go ahead with your question. Over.
Hi, Ken. Thanks a lot. And yeah, WQ1I, we're located in Danbury, Connecticut. And I've been listening to your presentation here. It's all very interesting, and I really first wanted to thank you for the wonderful job you've done presenting an awful lot of information here, more than we can digest at one time. We'll have to be doing some homework with these links. And I'd like to thank Gordon for putting those links in there as well. I guess visit some of these websites. But my question was a fairly simple one. I tend to be the guy who asks the simple questions, Ken. And, you know, the space station comes overhead probably a few times a day. I'm not sure how many orbits a day that they do, and or even up to several times a day. And yes, there's a schedule you can find out, you know, when they're going to be overhead for your location. But they're really busy people up there, and I wonder how often they actually are on the radio for you know, voice communications. And if they have a schedule when there's a time set that they're going to be doing that, or if it really is hit or miss, that any time that you know they're going to be going overhead, whether or not they'll be actually available to answering a CQ. Or so I guess that's what I'm wondering about, is the success rate frequency-wise of just hitting them at a time when they're open to communication. Back to you, Ken, VK6, COWQ1I.
Yeah, WQ1I, VK6, Charlie Oscar. Yeah, very good question there, Paul. Unfortunately, yes, you have hit the nail on the head. It is very hard to be able to get to talk to an astronaut on the downlink and uplink due to their very heavy workload. They don't actually have a rostered type list where you could say, okay, we're going to get a bit of downtime tonight at a certain pass where you can talk to them. Most times they have school contacts, as you're pretty well aware of, and they have an Earth station telebridge operator with a preset lot of questions and stuff, and school children that you know discuss certain questions with the astronauts, and but these are scheduled well in advance, months in advance, and but it is possible, and I personally myself have not had a contact on the downlink with an astronaut. Plenty of sessions on slow scan TV and crossband repeater, and when Richard Garriott was on, all these modes were really firing, and we had a ball of a time. And but on the odd occasion, you do get an astronaut that will, on a very quiet pass, maybe in the middle of the night sometimes, will come up on voice, and you're very privileged if you get the chance to be able to talk back to him. So That is one of the problems where it is very hard, but there are other modes that I haven't actually touched on that are built into UIView and also on one of the URLs where you can actually type a message up to the astronauts, and on the odd occasion they do reply, but it's only in text form. And but nonetheless, it is a. But I haven't discussed that tonight because there is a lot of information, and I don't really want to sort of overwhelm the whole situation where we get too much information out there. And I can always do a few more talks in the new year on different subjects. But I'm always free to try and find out any questions, answers to any questions that anyone may have in the coming months. And Gordon knows where to contact me if needed. Hope that's answered some of your questions anyway for you there, Paul. WQ1I, VK6 Charlie Oscar, was there anything further there, Paul? And if not, is there anyone else on the net that's got a question? Over.
No, Ken, that about covers it, and that's pretty much what I expected too. Thanks a lot for your answer. Thank you for doing this net tonight for us. It's fascinating, very interesting stuff, and I hope everybody else is enjoying it. And I'll throw it back to you and see if you can get anybody else to come along. I believe that Jim, WB4LBM, may have been doubling with me, so perhaps he's looking to get a hold of you there, Ken. Back to net, WQ1I, will be clear and listening.
Yeah, thank you very much there, WQ1I, VK6 Charlie Oscar, your net host for this evening's TIN South Cars net. Okay, there may be another station. I think it might have been Jim or WB4LBM it may be. If you're on there, Jim, and you have a question, perhaps we can hear from you. So WB4LBM, I think it is, VK6 Charlie Oscar, over.
WB4LBM, good evening, or at least evening here. It's boring there, but very good, and I just wanted to help a little bit, maybe understand this KISS mode, but I'm like Gordon, it's been 15 years since I've done anything with it. About this thing, but I've still got the equipment that's still in there anyhow. And the KISS mode is basically using somewhat of the computer's intelligence to do certain things, letting your computer do the thinking. How to do it, and the TNC, as it were, is nothing in the world but a device to follow a computer's commands, whereas a regular non-KISS mode. You could use a dumb terminal for that. Your computer basically is just a dumb terminal, and all the intelligence is in the TNC, which is my preferred way because the computer is not too smart at all. So I believe I'd rather the TNC do the thinking for me. But anyway, that's the difference, is where the thinking takes place. And in the KISS mode, the unit is basically just a terminal that converts RS-232 output into tones. And that's it. But really, the TNC is keeping the situation simple, stupid. Whereas the other modes, the TNC's doing a whole lot of thinking, and your terminal can be KISS. it can be keep it simple. So that's basically the difference between them. I certainly appreciate what you're doing this evening here also. And over.
Yeah, WB4LBM, Jim, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Yes, thank you very much for that, Jim. And yes, that's very correct. And it's certainly a good thing to try and get into Packet. I think it was very very successful over here in Australia. We still have some bulletin boards operating, terrestrial ones, but a lot of them are closing up with the advent of the computer. One of the downsides to KISS mode, to KISS mode TNC as well, is that it cannot be used with a simple terminal program like a conventional TNC, and you've got to use software that supports KISS mode. And you know, most packet programs these days do support KISS mode, and you know, there's WinTNC and UIView, WinAPRS, and ZASTAR. But people don't really have to worry about that out there. If they just get a standard TNC, like I mentioned, all these programs will also work fine. And that's very good anyway on that explanation there, Jim. I had a bit of paperwork here and there, and of course it's a bit hard sometimes to gather your thoughts when you're trying to get over a few things. And there's such a large array of you know, different programs and modes on the ISS. It's very interesting, and you know, you could talk for hours, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And the good thing is you can see, you know, the results of your contacts and all that sort of stuff. So, okay, once again, thanks very much there, Jim. We'll pass it over the net, over to the net again, see if there's anyone else with any more questions, and if not, we'll probably put it to Gordon to put a few comments in, and we'll see how we go from there. So, this is VK6 Charlie Oscar in Perth, Western Australia, for the South Cars Tin Net. Are there any other listeners out there that have any questions that they might like to put forward, please? Over.
VE3MEW.
VE3MEW. William, a very good evening to you there, William. Go ahead, please. Hope I can answer your question for you. Over.
Yeah, good evening, Ken. VK6 CO, VE3MEW here in Peterborough, Ontario, on a rather very chilly night, going down well below freezing tonight. Anyway, no doubt you've told us a great deal of information, far more than I was aware of. My ears really perked up when you mentioned the name Richard Garriott, the son of Owen Garriott, who was the first astronaut to ever actually use amateur radio from space back to Earth. I met Richard at the 2009 Hamfest and his father, got to talk with him for a while. I'm one of the people that paid a lot of money into his organization over the years, playing his games and helped him get up there, and he had a good laugh, a good chuckle over that, and he agreed that it was people like me that helped him make his fortune. Anyway, here's my question, Ken. First of all, let me say really a great vote of thanks to you, sir. An absolutely wonderful presentation. I'm actually going to download the podcast when it becomes available and save it on my machine here. And I'm going to listen to it a couple more times. No doubt you're familiar with a program called ISS Tracker. Real-time location of the ISS space station. It's a graphical program, and it shows the space station graphic as it's going around the Earth, giving you the altitude, the miles per hour, and latitude, longitude, so on and so forth. However, there is a white circle around the graphic, which spreads out a fair distance. And I heard a story or a rumor. Somebody told me that white circle on that graphic represented the audio or the transmission, reception and transmission footprint of the ISS. But nobody has ever been able to confirm whether that's true or not. And I just wondered if you could tell me if that is indeed true. And if it is, then it's a help. That way you get a little bit of representation when it's heading over your area. But just when it might be overhead to be heard, even though it may not be in visible sight yet, and as it disappears over the horizon, how much longer you might have to work it. So I'm just curious to whether that white circle is the transmission and reception footprint of the ISS. Can I go ahead?
Okay, V3MEW, William, up there in Ontario. Yes, a very good question there, William, and hopefully I can give you the answer. I am aware of the program, but I haven't actually had a look at it. But I would say that you are 100% correct there. Normally, if I can refer to a similar program, which I've mentioned tonight, Orbitron by Sebastian Stoff, which is a freeware tracking program, one of the best I've used. I have used a couple, but these I've selected Orbitron because it's a freeware program, and of course times are tight out there nowadays, money-wise, and it's a very easy program to use. But that does have a provision in the program where you can click on to show the footprint of the International Space Station. Now, that is very similar to what you describe. It is a circle that is imposed on the world map that that Orbitron actually generates onto your computer screen, and it will actually show, as it goes over your QTH, a circle which is the working area of the the radio receive and transmit area, that anywhere within that footprint or circle you are able to contact the International Space Station. So my answer to your question without looking at the program would be yes, that's what it is. And UIView and most other programs, such as the one that's on the ISS Fan Club website, also generates a circle onto a map, and that is the workable radio footprint for the ISS. You will see it move as it sweeps across, say if it goes over Canada or Australia, depending on the coverage and the elevation, the footprint will vary. Sometimes if it's right overhead, say in Australia, it virtually encompasses the whole continent, which enables stations to digipete. I can actually digipete a station from Perth to Sydney or Victoria, which is, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 k's away, via the ISS. Now, as long as it's in that workable footprint, say the Sydney station and me in Western Australia, you do have a radio link through the digipeter on the ISS. So that's what I'd be 100% sure that's what it would be on that program as well there, William. Hope that's answered your question. V3MEW, VK6, Charlie Oscar, over.
Okay, very good, Ken. Thank you very much. I'm going to take that as a positive response, a yes answer. And just to clarify, what this is not a program, it's a website. www.isstracker.com, the isstracker.com, or ISS Tracker is all one word. So it's www.isstracker.com, and I have it up and running on my web browser right now in Firefox web browser here. And so it's not a program per se. It's a website, and I have it up in my favorites bar, and I can click on it at any given moment and see exactly where the space station is. And there's a white circle under it. Looks like it's coming up over Hawaii, and coming down east of Australia at the moment. So I put that up in the text box, by the way. Anybody may want to check that quick program out and bookmark it, www.isstracker.com. Thanks very much, Ken. Cheers, my friend, from VE3MEW.
Yeah, VE3MEW, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Yes, okay, very good, William. I've had a look at it. I've got it up and running now. Yes, that is the footprint area. So that white circle is wherever that is embedded onto a country, that is the contact range for radio. Okay, this is VK6 Charlie Oscar in Perth, Western Australia, on the South Cars TIN net for tonight, Thursday's net. Is there any other station out there that has any question they would like to put forward, please? Over.
Okay. While it's quiet, 6 Victor, sir.
KY6V, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Yes, go ahead, please, Gordon.
I was trying to sit back here and figure out what time it is for you down there. Let's see. It's 8:22 here. Grand show. So that's 9:22 in the morning in Perth, I would assume. Thanks, Ken. Enjoyed it very, very much. KY6V, Gordon here. And as far as Jim goes up there in Georgia, I read you loud and clear, Jim, about the KISS mode and garbage in and garbage out. I want you to know that my first BBS contact on digital was with a dumb terminal. And I wonder, Ken, how far back you go with packet. And particularly with a space program. I'm going to tell you a story that you won't believe, nor will anybody else, but nevertheless, it's true. I was in the southern part of Florida here, south of Miami, back many, many years ago, and these shuttles were screaming up into the blue and wandering around in orbit, and most, if not all, of the guys and gals were licensed hams, and they'd get on during their orbit around the Earth. And I said, I got to have this. I just have to have this. And I want to tell you, Ken, I had a station that was a station. First of all, I could muster a full solid kilowatt on 2 meters. I had a 20-element collinear rotatable antenna at 65 feet. The feed line was radio broadcasting transmission line, 3 1/8-inch diameter hard line between the transmitter and the antenna. And I turned that 20-element off to the west, knew when this guy was coming over the horizon. You know, first of all, you have to imagine that when they're up there like that, they're hearing 14,623 signals at once, all calling at the same time. The moment that I heard his sound bust my speaker, I keyed down and called just once, and he came right back to me, and I've got the QSL to prove it. Ken, KY6V, over.
KY6V, VK6, Charlie Oscar. Very good, Gordon. Yes, well, I could only dream about having something in my backyard like that. I've run into a lot of problems with neighbours and a few visits from the authorities, but I've been vindicated every time. So, but certainly ran a bit of equipment here, but nothing along those lines. And about the thickest I've got is a bit of LDF 450, and I run some LMR 400 for my egg beaters on the ISS, and HF. I had an Ameritron 600 watt linear. We're only licensed for 400 watts PEP here in Australia. I believe New Zealand now, you can access 1,000 watts PEP on license, but there is something in the pipeline there. But yes, certainly you would be able to fry a bit of toast and you wouldn't have any mosquitoes outside there, Gordon, running that sort of equipment. So yeah, very good, sir. And with the packet there, probably on the space station, Gordon, I've only been running packet on that for 3 or 4 years, but I've been dabbling with packet, you know, a lot longer on the terrestrial BBSs, so it goes well back, around about 12 years or more, for packet mode, which you've seen my Radio Shack with some of the pictures I've sent over, and I do have a digital section there for all that sort of gear, and a couple of eye gates on each band. And five computers I run in the shack here apart from my other radio equipment. So, yeah, certainly it's a very, very interesting mode, and unfortunately there it's very hard to talk about and actually describe everything on a net without, you know, all you can do is supply URLs and let the listeners download these programs and have a look. And the beauty about it is it's only a step-by-step thing, and it, you know, it's... something you can put together over a period of days or weeks, and it's very rewarding as well. So I bet you certainly frame that QSL card. Okay, Gordon, I'll put it back to yourself, and perhaps you can redirect it. Yes, it is 9:27 a.m. here in the morning, Friday morning, so you should have bought some, or should have given you some lotto numbers or something there, and you would all be winners there, seeing as though we're 12, 13 hours ahead, and I could have read the results. KY6V for the group, VK6 Charlie Oscar.
I think we're going to have to work on that idea. That may really pay off on the long run. Thanks, Ken. I think we got a Doppler effect between you and I. I'm reading 28, you were saying 27. After the hour, but we're not going to bother with that. Well, sir, let's see if there's any other questions or comments out there before we pass it over to Miss Sunshine. Kathy's going to close the session out tonight. Want to thank you for just everything, Ken. We have recorded this. I've been recording it on three machines. Two locally here and one a remote machine, so that if I lost ISP, I still had it. And I think Kathy's been recording also, as I understand it. So there's at least four machines that have captured the evening's activity. Guys and gals, Gordon KY6V for South Cars. Any other comments for Ken, please? Call now. All right, let me turn it back to you, Ken. With your permission, I'll let Kathy... do her thing. What do you think? Over.
Yeah, KY6V and the NEP listeners, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Yes, fine there, Gordon. I think we've covered a fair bit there, and I did mention, I did notice just one comment in the little box there that about someone using an antenna with 5 watts handheld. Now, that's quite common too. If you've got a little Aris handheld antenna, one of those little cross Yagis they have for 270 and a little handheld with a 5 watt duplexer in it, you can certainly listen to the space station with a handheld and other satellites for that matter. So there's plenty of stuff up there to listen to, HO68 and a whole heap of satellites and different modes, so enough to keep everyone very happy for many months. Yes, okay, well that's all I have from here, Gordon. It's been a pleasure. I hope we've been able to assist there in some small way and get people interested enough to give Packet a try, and perhaps in the new year we can talk on something else. So my pleasure, and we'll put it over to Kathy, I believe, now. So also thank you very much, Kathy, for your preamble and introduction there. It's been a pleasure for sure. Hopefully it's Kathy's turn. So K6SUN Kathy, this is VK6 Charlie Oscar wishing everyone a very good evening, and look forward to catching up in the very near future, and we are available for any assistance on the programs. Contact Gordon. Gordon can contact me with any problems, and I'll be more than happy to assist where we can. Good night, everyone, from Perth, Western Australia. K6SUN, Kathy, VK6 Charlie Oscar. Over to you, Kathy.
Well, thank you so much, Ken, and I've been listening from afar, but I've been listening to the whole program, and it's been super, and I've enjoyed listening to the program. I've enjoyed hearing the comments from everyone. I do want to say a special hello to Joan, VK6 Charlie November, also there in Australia, and to everyone tonight. But at this point, we're going to close the program, but before I do, I want to encourage everyone to join our Saturday Nets As usual, we have the morning nets in the Eurasia and the Pacific, and of course the global and the Sunday Rag too. I then want to thank everyone this evening once again for joining us. But this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VORP net schedules and general information may be found on our website. That's www.vorp.southcars.com. Your net control for this session has been actually VK6CO. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. KY6B has been in the background as well. Saying 73, closing this VOIP session this evening. Thank you, everyone, for your participation, your questions, and your comments. The net is now closed and returned to regular amateur use. Everyone have a great evening. If we don't talk, have a great Thanksgiving. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November saying bye-bye for now. Thank you.